I hope I'm not disappointing anybody by that that he's focusing on. I hope I'm not. I hope I'm not disappointing people that I'm focusing a lot on my hometown, but I'll pun him. We don't have that much time now, so just short about Reb Yitzchak Chanan and about the Dvar Avram. Kovna, we'll speak later a lot. It was a very aristocratic city, very regal. The signon of the people was like that. Reb Yitzchak Chanan spec, it had very famous rabbanim. The Rabbi Shor Leib was a rougher at Kufa here, Reb Yitzchak Chanan, and the Dvar Avram. Reb Yitzchak Chanan was one of the first rabbanim that had sort of a standing of the Posik Hador. Reb Yitzchak Chanan was the address for all of Europe and America. He was known for his incredible asmada, for his psak specifically on agunis. He has an incredible amount of heterim. And he writes specifically that once he took on the Olor Rabbanis, he had to find heterim. As he was dying, basically, he took out of his pocket another letter to write a tshuva, because he felt that has to be taken care of before he goes. And he was recognized. People had pictures of him. People, you know, Reb Yitzchak Chanan was a sort of an international figure of the Posik Hador. He was probably the first in memory like that. The Dvar Avram was the Rav up until the war. He was Reb Zalman Sender Shapiro's son. He was a very big Talmud Chacham. He was also typically, I guess, of the Ruach of Kovna. He was an intellectual. He was extremely dignified. You couldn't go into him. Only Rabbanim and Meir Hura went to ask him the Shailas, and you know, he answered them. When he would walk in the street would clear away, and even the Umas Olam would stand back with Yiras HaKavod. He became sick right towards the war. He had cancer. He went to Switzerland for an operation. He came back. They offered him to stay in Switzerland. He said he owes the Kehillah too much Hakaras HaTov, and he's going to stay with them till the end. He was nifted in the ghetto. My father was zeichet to mishamish him when he was sick. And he didn't lose his bearings even when he was sick. He didn't speak to somebody when there was no reason to talk to. So even the people that were mishamish him, his Rebbetzin would strike up conversations with them to keep them awake and so this and that. In him, if there was no reason to speak, he didn't speak. It was a very different type of Hanhaga than we used to. He had two sons that I know of. One of them was a lawyer in America. I don't know what happened further after that. And he had a son who was a professor in the University of Semitic Languages. He was a scholarly person, perished in the war, him and his wife and his child. The Dvar Avram was nifta in the ghetto. He was zeicha to a proper levaya still, and that was it. And in a sense, with that, it was over. It's very interesting how we'll speak about Reb Chaim Moshe in Vilna. It also seemed to be as if when the captain went down, the ship went with him. That was the tzura of the Rabbanis and so on. And we'll speak more when we a little bit later. I have time. You know, Kovna was not an easy city. It was a very sophisticated, cultured kind of. It was a modern city in population as well. On the other hand, they were very traditional. So it wasn't as if they broke from the Kehillah, but on the other hand, Shmiras HaMitzvos was kind of lagging, and he had the difficult job of sort of holding rein on it. And Mitzvah Hashem, I don't know, what, we have 5 minutes left, or what do we have about? So let me tell you a story that I heard, again, from like one person removed. This is the person, Kablyansky, I told you about a book that he wrote that I have. His father was a Haredi balabas in Litta, in Kovna. His daughter became more left-wing, and she decided to marry a guy who was a communist, a Yid, but a communist. He came to Dvar Avram, and he cried his heart out, and he said, I don't know what to do. He said, you know, my daughter fell in love with this person, what should we do? So Dvar Avram said, you should put up a chuppah and marry them, kedasu kedin. So he said, with that shegetz, the Dvar Avram got very upset, and he said, you call a Yid a shegetz? It's Zeri Yisrael. How dare you? His son was a yeshiva bachur in Kamenitz. As the war went on, they ended up somewhere near Siberia or deep in Russia, and his son lost it, and his son decided to marry out. The father was staying in a place that was 10 kilometers from a shul, and he was oismensch. And he walked through a thick snow to a shul, he opened up an Ohr Kodesh and started crying. And he fainted. And the Dvar Avram came to him in a cholam, and he said, you didn't understand what Zeri Yisrael means, now you understand. And then he said, but don't worry, it'll work out. And in the end, he dropped, he never followed through. He ended up in Eretz Yisrael, he was a Frum Yid, and this is, I think it's his father, Kublyansky's father. Not sure if his father's grandfather, but that's the person. I heard it from the person, I heard the story from him. But it was very difficult times. People were very educated here. People were very into, when you describe the person, the first midah was, he's an aristocrat. And the second one was, and he's very intelligent. And the third one was, and he's very frum. But that was a third. People here were very marich stolz, you know, holding yourself with dignity. That was extremely important. Intelligence, studying, learning was very important. And that's why the Haskalah here, people were less into social justice movements, less into fighting. They were into Hebrew a lot. They were very, very into the Hebrew culture. They were cultured people. Studying, learning, all of that was extremely important. But on the other hand, a strong sense of being makbid on a kutzel shayut was kind of, it was against the grain of the covenant people. People here did not like fanaticism. They liked very much refinement. It had certain milas. My father would told me, like, for a person to walk in the street and smoke a cigarette on Shabbos was a grubber jung. How can you do it? I mean, you know, it was considered to be the coarse, in-your-face Chilul Shabbos wasn't acceptable. You know, it slowly degenerated over time and people started going out. But that was the flavor to people. On the other hand, the type of kutzel shayut kpeida was also not, was not in the blood of the people. So when it came to being shayim mitzvahs with a dikduk and so on and so forth, it was not easy to get that through. Like upon him, so you have two great rabbanim, Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan, who really was the poisek hador. Everything came to him. He paskin shailas in machlokas nami yeshiva. Those machlokas who should be the yeshiva. He paskin. This was talking in the 1800s, mid 1800s. When it's the Kaczynski and so on, and it was I think it was the Eisenstats and Rebbe Lebor Kamai, I believe, was that machlokas. But he was the one who basically paskin. Rebbe Yitzchak Yochanan's word was gold. He also had a very interesting person who was his secretary. His name was Yankel Lifshitz. He was a kochleffel, very, very diligent, a man who was a real hustle-bustle person, you know, cold boy, could do everything and anything. He was a big kanoi also, and people accused him of having undue influence on Rebbe Yitzchak Yochanan, that starts a tradition of tining that the gaboyim are the ones that federated Koptic Dailum. That's where the tradition comes from. This Yankel Lifshitz wrote a historical work that's really, really good. It's called Zichron Yaakov, three volumes of memoirs, and it discusses everything in his times. And he's quite open. He doesn't censor himself terribly. Sometimes people feel that he's putting his own kanoas in and so on. As a historical footnote, this Yankel Lifshitz has a great grandson who's today the editor of Yated Neman, Pini Lifshitz. That's his great grandson. But Al Kopanim, Yankel Lifshitz was a very, very, he was chief of staff of Rav Yitzchak Chanan, and the Maskilim couldn't argue in Rav Yitzchak Chanan. He was too big of a figure to argue. So they tainted that it's Yankel Lifshitz's, he's the one who's ruining everything, and they called his office the Lishka Shcheira, the black office. In other words, he generates blackness for Litter. But you see, they could not touch Rav Yitzchak Chanan. Rav Yitzchak Chanan was above accusation, reproach, or anything like it. When we speak about Sabotka, we'll understand that for the Muslim movement to have started in Kovna could only have been because Rav Yitzchak Chanan was at least tacit consent. Had he been opposed it, like his son later did, it would never gotten off the ground. Rav Yitzchak Chanan was the Murad Asra with a capital M and a capital A. Okay, so we'll be there soon.